I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Number one.
Miss any part of the show?
Every moment of every show is available in podcast form
by searching Hanson Scotty on your favorite podcasting platform or online at kslsports.com. This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hanson Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Just a little after 2 o'clock. Talked about Jay Hill earlier in the show. He came on with us, well, with you, last week. Had some really interesting comments about where that team is at and where they're working towards and the complexities of trying to install a new defense there at BYU and what it's like to try to put that together.
Yeah, I would say it's one of the more complicated ones in college football. We have a lot. We do a lot of different things. You know, we'll play man, cover three. We zone pressure with, you know, two high safeties, zone pressure with one high safety. We got a drop eight package. We got a lot of man pressure, zone pressures. Like I said, I mean, it's just there's a lot of things that we do. And it's really hard on the linebackers and the safeties as far as learning goes. And then, you know, for the D-line and corners, there's not quite as much learning, but there's a lot of technique and skill that obviously has to go into those positions where those guys have a lot to learn. So anyway, bottom line, I would say it's new for these defensive players, the amount of learning that they have. And, you know, it's up to them to get it down, and then it's up to the coaches to do a good job of teaching it.
He says it's the most difficult or one of the most difficult in the country, defenses to implement. And it puts a lot of the pressure on the safeties and linebackers. The good news is I think you've got a couple of really good safeties. I think that Micah Harper is going to be special. I think Malik Moore is solid. I think that you've got probably three or four guys deep. You're going to take a look at Raider DeMooney and see how ready he is, because he was a very nice recruit for BYU. So your safeties are okay. Linebackers, you're losing a lot of linebackers, as we know, Scotty. But still, you got Ben Bywater, who's going to be out there, and you got Max Tooley. They're not currently out there, but they'll be back in fall. Both of them right now are sitting out, and you're getting a really heavy linebacker rotation right now through spring, trying to get some other guys some looks. But, and you've moved a couple of guys back to linebacker. You took some weight off Fisher Jackson, and I know Fisher has kind of worked both at times, but you're looking for answers at the linebacker position. But you know, having covered Kyle Whittingham's defense for so long, it comes down to how good is your play caller at the linebacker position and how capable is your strong safety. If you have those very intelligent, highly intelligent players, then you can have a defensive end that just knows good technique and can rush. You can have corners that just know good press techniques and can sit in their different coverages and really press. But you got safety and linebackers that are organizing the play. So I try to walk through how much I trust those safeties and those linebackers, those couple safeties and those couple linebackers I mentioned. I trust them. I just don't know if I trust them enough in this defense. Fall camp will tell us a lot. But what was interesting, Scott, is when I got into it with Jay, I started asking Jay, do you got the dogs? So as you've gotten kind of a feel for the athleticism of the crew, were you, was it about what you expected when you took over this roster, just the overall size, speed, and strength of the talent that you're taking over? Is it kind of what you'd hoped and expected?
No, because my expectations for BYU football and BYU defense are, I mean, I expect to see some big, athletic, physical horses up front. And I'm not sure that we have the number, the sheer number of guys in that boat that, you know, I thought we would have. But that comes through recruiting. That comes through development. That just, that's something that we want to continue to do a good job of. I think back in the days, like when you played hands, and you had you and the Byron Frisches and Rob Morrises and, you know, Justin Anna was just a puppy in that defense. But the sheer size and strength, and Chris Hoke, those guys, like, we've got to get back to that point where we're just physically big and strong and dominating.
Not overly encouraging.
That hesitation there.
Can you isolate that? Can you just kind of play that again?
Just that first question and then the first part of the answer.
Kind of what you'd hoped and expected? So this is the good news, Scotty. Jay Hill is very honest.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He's not pulling punches. He's very honest, and I know he's honest with his players. And all I ever expected from a coach is just be honest with me. If I'm screwing around too much and I'm not getting the job done, then say, you're going to lose your position. You're going to lose your start. You're going to lose your play time. That was the one thing I was interested in. You tell me I'm going to lose my play time, and you tell me I'm not big enough, I'm not fast enough, and that I better get to work, then I better get to work. If I don't feel like I've got it in me, then, you know, then I guess we move on down the line. But Jay Hill is very honest. And don't think that the guys that he's currently working with don't know his expectations.
Yeah.
They know exactly what he expects. And there's some guys that just can't add the height. There's some guys that are on that defensive front that are 6 foot. Can't add the height. Okay, then what do you bring to me? What do you bring to the team? Do you have an explosive first step? Can you hit penetration? Can you gap spark? Are you extremely fast laterally? Can I move you in twists, stunts? Are you really smart? Are you a setup artist? Do you know how to press a guard multiple times to get him to do exactly what you want him to do when it's a third and three? And you need to get that certain press or that certain movement. How smart are you? Because you're going to have to bring some real talent for Jay to keep you on the field. Jay's dogging out. I'm telling you right now, BYU and their recruiting is changing dramatically. It's changing dramatically. So we'll see where it takes them.
Yeah. I think there's two things here you look at is what do you see this year and what do you see 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Because I know the transfer portal can accelerate things a little quicker than usual, but it's still BYU, and it's still not everybody is a BYU candidate. I mean, there's going to be some guys that are going to look at BYU and say, nah, I'm going to pass, you know, even though the NIL money could be competitive and everything else. I mean, it's a bit of a hard sell for some kids, and that's totally understandable, and that's fine. And so I think there's two questions that people are going to ask about a Jay Hill-led defense at BYU is, what does it look like in 2023, and what will it look like in 2025-26? And I think those could be two different things. It's okay to have a bit of a learning curve with this defense. It's a new scheme. It's, you know, the drop eights in the rearview mirror. There's a lot of things that BYU will be doing very differently. And I think it'll also be very aggressive. But also with that aggressiveness, sometimes, you know, we talked about Kalani Sitake the year that at the University of Utah, where they led the nation in sacks. I believe they were also top five worst teams in college football in giving up plays over 20 yards. They gave up some explosives that year because they were getting after the quarterback. And if you don't hit, sometimes you got guys wide open in the backfield. And so you might see a little bit of that this year. You might see the sacks go up and the aggression go up. I love the BYU defensive backfield this year. I think they are loaded. I think, as you said earlier, I think they are as good in that defensive backfield as they've ever been. But I think that if you are super aggressive with your front seven, sometimes those guys are on an island, you'll give up some plays.
Here's Jay talking about his level of aggression, Scotty.
Well, I think you've got to be aggressive. I don't like sitting back on my heels and letting the opponent dictate to me everything that's going to occur. But at the same point, we're not going to be dumb. We're not just going to blitz every snap and leave the corners on an island every single snap. I mean, that's not aggression. That's stupidity. And so there's a fine line. It comes back to, we got to do a good job of confusing quarterbacks and giving them enough looks that they don't hone in on exactly what we're trying to get done. So will we still drop eight? Absolutely. Will you see four-man pass rush? Absolutely. Will you see five- and six-man pressures? Yes, but we're not going to blitz every snap. That's dumb. It's the ability to do multiple things and do multiple things well that I think is going to be what I consider aggressive.
Wait, what did he say right there at the back end? What I consider to be aggressive? That last thing at the very back end of that. Said we're going
in on exactly what we're trying to get done. So will we still drop eight? Absolutely. Will you see four-man pass rush? Absolutely. Will you see five- and six-man pressures? Yes, but we're not going to blitz every snap. That's dumb. It's the ability to do multiple things and do multiple things well that I think is going to be what I consider aggressive.
Do multiple things.
And multiple things well. And that's, you know, because honestly, the drop eight can be very effective at times, right? You're blitzing, and they think, hey, you know what? This is 9 times out of 10, they blitz in this third and whatever, and you drop eight, and that quarterback's looking to hit that slant because he's expecting that outside linebacker to come strong, and all of a sudden you drop out, and you have a DN sitting there, and it's an interception mm-hmm. because he's right there in that route. Because that quarterback, like, I think that what he's saying should be applauded by every BYU fan out there. Be great at a lot of things. Be aggressive, sure. Get after the quarterback. But also, let's be smart in how we address things.
When you see Morgan Scali turn up the aggression, it is a visible aggression. Even if you have an untrained eye watching the game, you're watching Morgan Scali and you see Morgan turn up the aggression, you can see it with an untrained eye. You know, whoa, there was a lot more guys at the line and there was a lot of movement and there were pre-snap shifts. There were linebackers that were twisting and crossing each other, going to the opposite ends of the ends, coming around as the ends plunged in. Like, you can see it. That's what you're hoping for from Jay and this defense at times. That when he wants to turn it up, he can turn it up. That he's got the personnel that he trusts that he can really turn it up. That's what my hope for this defense.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, the most consistent, the most reliable things you've got to have in order to do that are corners, I think. Yeah, you got to have the personnel that can turn it up and has the speed to hit the different slants, hard stunts. You got to have the speed from your linebackers to get from a 4-yard depth to get to the quarterback in the snap of a finger, or a safety that understands his depth on a walked-up safety blitz. You've got to have that, but I think what you've got to have is corners that you can trust.
Yeah, good point. I do look at look, you know the game far better than I do, but I also think, to a certain extent, football can be a pretty simple game, where in reality, your goal on defense is, you know, up against a passing attack, is make the quarterback feel confused and feel anxious. And if you can do those two things, it doesn't matter how you get there, but if you can confuse him and if you can make him uncomfortable, those are the two things. If you can do that to a quarterback, whether it be a drop eight or whether it be a cover zero and you're bringing the house, that's what Jay Hill wants to do. And there's multiple ways you can skin that cat. And I think he's going to try to address all of those.
I do think it's going to be an unpredictable defense, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I felt like, at times, I felt like Ed Lamb's defense was too predictable.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I've talked to too many coaches that game planned around it. Now, working against it can be different. I mean, you can know what the other team's going to do and still not be able to do it. And to a certain extent, he had some successes.
They did that at times.
And, you know, if you're just great, sound, and I think Ed Lamb was good with that, saying, look, we know what we're going to do, and you're still not going to go 12 plays and 80 yards and score a touchdown. We feel like you're going to go 6 plays and maybe 50 yards, and we'll give up a field goal, and we're fine with that.
Yeah. Or you'll go 10 plays and you'll make a mistake.
Exactly.
And we'll take advantage of the mistake.
Yeah. But you're right. It didn't feel like there was a ton of creativity and a ton of ooh, what are they going to do on this play? What are they going to do on this? What are they going to bring here? There wasn't a lot of that.
I think Jay is going to bring the element of surprise. But as I talk about Vic Fangio often, because Vic just got another defensive coordinating job in the league.
I think he's the highest paid defensive coordinator in the league with the Dolphins.
So Vic Fangio's defense, the first defense I learned when I went into the NFL, if you don't have the right personnel, it doesn't matter how ingenuitive or how creative you get. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you don't got the right personnel, it doesn't matter. Jay could put in the world's best defense and he could be the best defensive mind, but if he doesn't have corners that can truly press and safeties that have aggression and anger at the point of attack, it doesn't matter. And I know he has a lot of faith in the talent that's there. I know he believes it, but you could hear in his answer, it's like, give me a minute. Give me a minute. The other thing that's tough, being a coordinator that comes in and takes over defense at BYU, you for a couple of years, you're going to be waiting on other guys to come back from missions.
Yeah.
And you're evaluating, you're saying, okay, so how many scholarships do we have on a mission right now? 7 defensively. So I've got 7 defensive scholarships that are going to be coming back next year. Yeah.
Can't use those unless you find a one and done.
Yeah. So he's going to be dealing with some talent. And I do think, personally, I think there's some really good talent out of missions.
Yeah.
I mentioned John Henry Daly.
Yeah, kid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cannot wait for him to get back. Chris Hoke's son, Nate Hoke, he'll be coming back off a mission. In fact, he'll be back for fall camp this year. So he'll be a linebacker that Jay is going to have to take a look at. I don't know if he can shake mission legs off that fast, but Chris Hoke did. He came back from mission, was really good, really quick.
You know where he's at?
Weight-wise?
No, location-wise. Because a lot of times that has a lot to do with it in terms of how ready you're able to get back. I mean, no offense, if you're in a third world country somewhere, not eating well, it can be difficult to come back.
I mean, it's
not a big deal, but if you're, you know, if you're in, Boise, you're probably going to be okay. You're eating good meals every night and life's pretty good. So.
Yeah, he's in Argentina.
That's some good meals down in Argentina.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, teppanyaki. It's great, I'm sure, there. It's got to be like, you know, let's get some teppanyaki.
Go all the way to Argentina for teppanyaki. But
the, I think he actually may have gotten some blowback for it, but Petros Papadakis said, yeah, he grew up with a lot of Mormon kids. He goes, a lot of Mormon football players, and the really good ones, they all got sent stateside. The ones that weren't very good, they got sent all over the world.
That is such a broad statement. That is such a guess.
And now it's not true. But.
Yeah, that is such a guess. Jay's got some talent coming back. Oh, I do believe that they are giving Jay some real leeway in the transfer portal to find some defensive personnel. I think they've got a few scholarships, not a ton, but they've got a few scholarships that they're going to be able to offer between spring ball and fall camp and bring in more talent defensively.
Mm. All right, 227 coming up next. We'll spin the wheel, a little sports roulette straight ahead, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
This is DJ and PK.
We're joined now by current Jazz assistant coach and former star of the 1998 University of Utah men's basketball team, Alex Jensen. When you see San Diego State or Miami or Florida Atlantic get into the Final Four for the first time and you see the wild celebration, I imagine you are transported 25 years instantly. Is that true?
For the most part, as time goes on, I get further and further from the college game. I still have quite a few friends there, but yeah, the memories often come back, and it was a great time. The highest highs and the lowest lows at the same time. It was a special group, and nobody wanted to be the guy to let everybody else down.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10. Presented by Murdoch Chevrolet. Proudly serving Utah since 1926. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
The wheel is loaded, and it's time to talk some sports. This is Sports Roulette with Hanson Scotty, presented by U First Credit Union on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hanson Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hey, look, I know there's a lot of snow out there. Let's be honest. Not every lawn is alike. You need a man that's going to come in and take care of that lawn, fertilize it the right way. Because, again, what your lawn needs isn't the same as what your neighbor needs or somebody across the street. Well, there's one man to take care of it. It's the Weed Man. Go to weedman.com today. That's weedman.com today. Let's get that lawn looking good. Get on the books. Eventually, believe it or not, the snow will be gone sometime.
Just looking at the Kevin Eubank weather report coming into the weekend for Friday's spring game for BYU, which should be in the 70s, but instead we're just going to have a storm tapering off, according to him. Says the storm should taper off overnight Thursday into Friday morning with some lingering mountain snow Friday morning. Provo will actually be in the mid-40s on Friday.
So you don't need to leave a day early to get there for it.
That's according to this. No, I can leave day of. That'll be nice. Partly cloudy skies in the afternoon. He said, so the trick is, can they get the field cleared of the snow for the game on Friday? That's according to Mitch Harper in the KSL sports piece that was just put up.
Reached out to K-Bank.
Yeah.
I'll bet you K-Bank didn't get back to him right away.
In the 40s. The 40s.
That almost seems like not real, 40 degrees.
Well, I know I've been out to some BYU and Utah spring games that it's shorts, it's hot.
Oh, yeah.
I get sunburnt I got glasses, sunglasses, rolled up sleeves. I've been to some really nice weather games. In fact, I can't remember a snowy spring game that I've been to in the last 10 years at least.
You know, on Sunday, the high, they like a year ago, last Sunday, or just barely past Sunday, a year ago from then.
Wasn't it like 80?
It was 79 degrees.
Oh, jeez.
It's Salt Lake, 79.
Well, it's looking like Friday is still planned for the alumni game, for the spring game. I know weather isn't going to really cooperate, but it should still be nice enough to be able to take the family out.
There you go. Come on. Hopefully. And plus, get you ready for some November football.
Yeah.
Tough it up. All right. Let's give away some Jazz tickets before we spin the wheel. 801-575-ZONE. It is a Team 49 Tuesday, which means we'll give away Jazz tickets every hour, all day long, right here on The Zone. So let's give them away. 801-575-ZONE. Caller number 12. You'll win tickets. See the Jazz and the Lakers coming up on April 4th. And you will probably see a very motivated Lakers team trying to sneak into the playoffs. And a Jazz team that hopefully will not. All right. Let's spin that wheel, Lloyd.
Let's take a look at the film.
So we didn't get to this in the ugly, so I threw it on the wheel. For those of you that haven't seen, Bradley Beal with the Washington Wizards is under police investigation. He was involved in a confrontation with some hecklers following a game last week. And by the way, it's these kinds of jack wagons that are going to completely eliminate the possibility of getting down in tunnels and being around players. This is the reason that NBA players continue to distance themselves from people. And I understand. I get it. I feel like NBA players are much more sensitive nowadays. I think that they react way too much to fan interaction and fan problems than they used to. Having fans ejected. Kyrie Irving just had one ejected last Friday, I think it was, or Saturday. But this is becoming a problem. So apparently, Bradley Beal was walking down a tunnel to the Wizards locker room area at Amway Center. And there were a group of guys. And one of the guys yelled at Beal. He said, "You screwed me out of $1,300, you jerk." Talking about a gambling issue. Beal then turned, walked towards the fans, and appeared to knock the hat off of one of the guys' heads in response to the heckle. So the guy had a hat on. Yeah. And you know how you pop the hat off. Beal and the fans then jawed back and forth. Beal called the comment disrespectful. He said, "Keep it buck."
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a...
said, "Keep it buck." Yeah, we got to figure that out. I think it's these guys in the...
Is that what... Did you play that, Lloyd, or did somebody else play that? Yeah, I think it's coming from the other room.
Yeah, that happened yesterday. That's actually happened the last couple days.
Go get him.
He said, keep it a buck. I don't give a beep about none of your bets or your parlays, bro. That ain't why I play the game. Things got kind of intense, and there were all kinds of words back and forth. And finally, Bradley Beal was ushered back into the locker room. So this went on for about a minute. Well, the victim contacted the police and met with the police the following day, and the fan told them that Bradley Beal hit him in the head when he swatted the cap off, that he actually hit him in the head. Well, that was enough to start an investigation.
Jeez.
So police have now collected some cell phone video of the incident. They actually went to the Amway Center, and they were looking for surveillance angles.
Yeah.
There was no camera surveillance angle, which... It's crazy in today's world because you can't walk an inch in the Vivint Arena.
That would not happen in Vivint Arena, especially since the renovations in 2017. You can't sneeze in that building without a camera finding you and analyzing the particles from that sneeze. Like, that thing is high tech. And I'm with you. I'm shocked that there's a blind spot anywhere in an arena.
Yeah.
Right now in the NBA.
Well, the Amway Center has a blind spot, and this was it.
Yeah.
So they don't have surveillance. I guess they've got a cell phone camera or two. But the victim told the cops he wanted to press charges against Beal.
Oh, of course he does.
And police said that there is enough probable cause to charge Bradley with simple battery, saying charges will be filed at large with the state attorney's office.
So you got a guy that's screaming and yelling at you, mm-hmm. calling you every name.
In your hallway.
In your hallway. And you go and you knock the hat off of a guy and you're going to get charged with simple assault.
That's where we're at as a country. So,
and the guy's like, and now I can't go to work. I got headaches and it's impacting my ability to feed my family and I'm suing for $100 million.
Yeah.
As soon as any level of contact was made, that guy was like, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of this. In fact, there's a pretty prevalent case locally.
Yeah.
Of a heavy sue job that's going on.
Yep.
And, you know, you listen to these cases and you hear the extent of it and you're like, come on, man. Now, you know what? That's something you're going to have to deal with.
Yeah.
You got to deal with it.
I just want a judge to be like, hey, you know what? You're going to need to deal with that.
You're going to need to deal with
that. You're going to need to handle that.
So Bradley Bill could have ignored it and probably should have. Yeah. You're right. He could have and he probably should have. Absolutely. You're right on that. He probably should have walked by and not let a fan get under his craw. But the fan is being a loudmouth idiot jerk. And every once in a while, you get a breaking point. You want to turn and say, I'm sorry, what's your problem? Flip the cap off. Do you got an issue? Get ushered back into the room. Well, he's getting hit with a charge, assault, a simple battery.
Simple battery, charge. Yeah. Oh, boy.
So we'll see how that plays out.
All right. Lloyd, spin that wheel.
Junior, still getting that money.
So baseball, and I don't know if this goes wrong in other sports, but we sure hear a lot about it in baseball with deferred salaries, and probably because the salaries in baseball are so, so crazy high. But we all know about Bobby Bonilla, who has not played baseball since, what, 1982, and he's still getting payments from the, I believe, the Pirates.
He might have actually got paid off like last year. I think it was like in a headline that we...
Is it really officially done?
I think he finally got paid off, and he's been done for a long time.
Well, Ken Griffey Jr., who has not played Major League Baseball since 2010, is the fourth highest paid player on the Cincinnati Red payroll right now. Right now, at $3.9 million.
Fourth highest?
Fourth highest on their payroll. Joey Votto is making $25 million. Will Myers on a one-year deal is paying $6 million. Mike Moustakas has got $22 million left on his deal. And then you got Ken Griffey Jr. in fourth place on the Reds' payroll. He signed a nine-year, $112 million extension with the Reds in 2000, had deferred payments from 2009 to 2024, and right now he is making $3.59 million this year. He's got one more payment coming up next year, and then he'll be officially off the books.
You see, I call Ken and I say, hey, roll your old bones in here and start playing.
Yeah.
I saw, take some at-bats.
I saw a batting practice with him. Did you see that? He was sitting at batting practice just hammering him out of the park.
See, it's all you need to do.
What can you do for us?
Get in there.
Can you at least hand water bottles out? Maybe go collect
a
bat?
Go earn this, you know? Go sit at a, you know.
Sit at first base.
Convenience, you know, sling some waters or beers or nachos or hot dogs or whatever.
Sit there and reel your arm and tell people to turn on third. I don't know, do something.
Reel your arm?
It's the right motion, I guess. $3.59 million, number four on their payroll. Which is, I mean, essentially it's, these are ways for guys to get paid and also have a little security left in their life and then also not count against the cap so they can sign them to these big contracts. But yet, I think it's a little bit more cap friendly, even though I know that nobody really pays attention to the cap in Major League Baseball. But still, and I think a GM at the time is like, hey, you know what? Here's the thing. You know, there's going to be multiple more TV deals that come out. So, you know, in 2023, that $3.59 million isn't going to be a big deal. And it really isn't. But still, holy smokes, the Bobby Bonilla thing is crazy. But there you go.
Yeah, Griffey should not be the fourth highest.
Yeah.
The fourth. Like down the line a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like there's no way.
Best, I mean, you're a baseball guy, Lloyd. Pure swing in the history of baseball?
Absolutely. Well, behind Barry Bonds, probably.
Okay. Stop.
Barry Bonds' swing was sweet.
It was.
Okay, I'm not going to lie.
Fabricated.
Griffey had a pretty sweet swing. It's something with lefties. Lefties typically have really good swings.
Do you think his entire career was clean?
Griffey?
Yeah.
I don't believe anybody was entirely clean.
Yeah. Do we got time for one more?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Numbers are in.
So, Scotty, we were talking about this yesterday, what the NCAA tournament might show in terms of numbers. I know we've got the Final Four, and then you've got the championship round, which I think we'll all be paying attention to, especially San Diego State's a part of it.
Yeah.
So, this was coming from Barrett Sports. Says the news is mostly positive for TBS. Thursday's broadcast of Kansas State, Michigan State, 5.9 million viewers. Up 88%.
Wow.
Compared to Villanova, Michigan in the same window a year ago.
And Villanova, Michigan, those are blue bloods there too. Yeah. So that's good. That's a good sign.
That number also represents the largest Sweet 16 audience for a network since 2015. Florida Atlantic's win over Tennessee, 3.9 million. 68% increase compared to the same window for TBS. Friday's broadcast of San Diego State over Alabama and Princeton to Creighton averaged 4.5 and 4.3. So San Diego State, Alabama, 4.5 million. 71% increase from 2022. But then you've got the CBS numbers. 6.1 million tuned in to Gonzaga's win over UCLA, but that was a 25% decrease compared to last year's Texas Tech Duke broadcast. Still pulling in 6 million. Similarly, the network's coverage of UConn, Arkansas saw 4.2 million viewers. That's a drop of 48% compared to Arkansas-Gonzaga last year. And then Friday's broadcast didn't pull the same numbers from last year. So CBS broadcasts are down. Why would that be? Is it your matchups?
Yeah, probably. I would say your matchups. I mean, Michigan State, Kansas State, two really good teams. That's good. That's a good matchup right there. I'm telling you, Tuesday of next week, we will be talking about really bad numbers for Saturday and Monday's championship, or Final Fours on Saturday and championship.
Does that not matter if it's Miami, UConn, San Diego State?
UConn might save it a little bit, but that San Diego State, Florida Atlantic game.
It seems like that's going to be down.
I'm going to be bad.
I think it's going to be a San Diego State, UConn final.
Yeah, I do. I agree.
And I don't know what that's going to pull.
And that won't be great either.
But this has been through the round of 64. That broadcast averaged 9.2 million viewers across CBS, TBS, TNT, True TV, and the March Madness live streaming platform. They're saying that that's the highest viewership you've had of the round of 64. Mm.
And I don't care, by the way. Look, I'm fired up for it. I love the fact that we got some Cinderellas into the Final Four. I think it's great. Your TV networks, I don't think, are going to be thrilled. But hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully on Tuesday you're reading the same kind of tweet like, hey, they were actually up. I think if you're CBS right now, you're like, if we can just keep even with last year, we'll take it. But last year, they had some blue bloods in that Final Four.
Oh, yeah.
North Carolina, Duke, Villanova, and I can't remember who the fourth team was, but it was, I mean, it was a pretty good crew, for sure.
Yeah, we'll see where those numbers come in.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, wrap things up next right here on The Zone.
Your home for Real Salt Lake is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
March was a bad month for RSL. Three straight losses. They'll try to get back on a winning track Saturday, April 1st, in Columbus to face the Crew, who just annihilated Atlanta 6-1. The pregame show will start Saturday at 4:30 on 97.5 The Zone. First kick at 5:30.
Catch every moment of every RSL match right here on your exclusive home of Real Salt Lake. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Standing here beside you, want so much to give you this love in my heart that I'm feeling for you.
Let them see we're crazy.
fans, we're going to be out and about tomorrow, hanging out with Jake once again at Tim Daly Mazda Southtown. Find your new Mazda at the south end of the valley. It's Tim Daly Mazda Southtown. Again, Tim Daly Mazda Southtown in Sandy. Stop by and say hi.
Also coming up tomorrow is the matchups of the 0-4s. San Antonio and Utah Jazz are collectively 0-8 in the last eight games. Both of them on a four-game losing streak. San Antonio's done a really good job. They've lost six of the last seven. They've lost two of the last 10. And the Utah Jazz now are on that track.
Yeah.
So it's in San Antonio. The interesting thing is the Spurs could probably afford a loss, or sorry, a win. The Utah Jazz can't afford a win. Utah Jazz cannot afford a win. They got to stay at that current record that they're at.
Yep.
So the Jazz sit at 35 wins right now.
Run the table, guys. Come on.
It's going to be really
Laurie,
tough.
That wrist, man.
It's going to take a lot of effort.
My wrist is swollen.
Well, we do know that Sexton and Clarkson, it feels like they're done for the
year. It does feel that way, yeah. There's no reason for them to come back.
They're still pushing Lowry because Lowry's the real deal. I mean, not taking Walker off the court.
Yeah. I mean, there needs to be a non-COVID illness with Walker Kessler. The wrist needs to flare up on Lowry. Clarkson's like, hey, I'm ready to come back. You're like, hey, you know, you got the player option coming up. Come on. You know, financially, you probably ought to just shut it down.
Yeah.
And then for Colin, it's like, hey, look, it's all about next year with you, Colin. We don't, like, groins, you don't mess around with those. We don't want hands going like, hey, what's going on with Colin Sexton's groin? You know, we don't need that.
Don't need to add to the groin.
We don't need to ask those questions.
No.
So let's just make sure you're 100% healthy going into next season. And Rudy Gay, you feel like you're going to show up? Yeah, coach. Okay, then you're out. We don't want good Rudy Gay.
That's kind of crazy, though, the battle of the 0-4s.
Right?
In a roundabout way, we are to where we thought this Jazz team would be.
Yeah. Maybe a little bit better than we thought. But
yeah, they're better than well, I did pick 36 wins preseason.
Which still blows me away.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, we probably should, you know, props to you for seeing it coming because that roster was too good.
It was a mixture of putting Clarkson, but at the time, remember, there was Mike Conley
and Beasley.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt.
There were reasons to feel like that Jazz team could get some wins.
Yeah.
But even when I said 36, I just wasn't fully expecting us to be at 35 with
six to go.
Yeah.
I mean, look, 500 is still on the table. They won't get it, but with six games left in the year and a team that mathematically could still finish at 500, that's remarkable.
It is. It's incredible.
All right. Be back with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Hans and Scotty. Well, again, we'll be live at Tim Daly Mazda in Southtown. Come on by, say hi. It's all right here on 97.5, the EKSL Sports Zone.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.